and welcome back to Hey Look Listen. My name is Liam Sheen and I'm joined here by my good friend Kevin O'Carroll. Kev, salutations.
And a fine salutations to you too, Liam. That's a bizarre way to open the podcast.
You got to mix it up, you know. I have a list of words I can use, you know, just to keep it fresh. Got to start this episode with a tiny apology. We sort of kind of unwittingly have been kind of away for the bones of a month. It's just the way things lined up. Kev, you were really busy. Jonathan and I went on a holiday. And if I remain vague about that, it'll sound like it's just him and me went on a holiday together in the French Alps. Oh, God. Yeah, have you ever seen the French Alps, but through Jonathan's eyes? It's beautiful. God, we had such a good time, him and me.
Oh, I thought we agreed that we were going to say that we gave up podcasting for Lent.
Oh, shit. Yeah, that would add up. Oh, damn it. We could have got that religious sector, couldn't we? Yeah. This is why we should discuss all your good ideas before we start recording an episode.
I'd love to tell you I had ideas in advance, but these things just happen.
Yeah. But look, no, we actually did. It was unintentional. We had plans, but we haven't been able to get an episode out for a while. So double thank you to anyone's listening here, because the internet is so ephemeral that even just disappearing for 3.5 weeks, I'm just really worried that we've just lost all the foundation we've built, you know?
Yeah, there is a good chance that we'll just upload this file and it will just, like, the internet will email it back to us and say, no, thank you.
Too real. But definitely amusing, Kev. But before we get onto our topic today, God of the War, what are you playing, Kev? It's been a while now, like we were saying. I think, are we just going to talk about Final Fantasy again, or do you have anything else?
No, because okay, first of all, yes, I am playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, and absolutely just fucking loving it.
Oh, good.
I'm about 28 or so, more than 25, less than 30 hours in.
Good.
In chapter 5, maybe. For those who know the structure of the game or the original game, it's on the boat across the ocean, going to Costa del Sol. And yeah, loving it. I have a lot to say, a lot of positives, some negatives, but at least the negatives are interesting, I suppose. But that's not the game that I want to talk about now, because the other game I've been playing at the moment has got its absolute fucking hooks into me. Its little brain worms are just digging into my gray matter, leaving very little room for anything else. How do you feel about poker, Liam? Are you a poker guy?
I ostensibly do like poker. But if anyone said to me, oh, do you want to be good if we played poker for the evening? I'd probably go, oh, no, let's not do that.
Yeah, because poker's shit.
I don't know about that.
Poker is a shit game played by degenerates.
Okay. Is Victoria Corn Mitchell a degenerate? I don't think so.
Debatable. there was a pub across the road from the place where I used to live in Middleton, and they had like two themed nights every week. Mm-hmm. They had, I think, Thursdays was like their D&D night, and Tuesdays was the poker night. And the difference between the two was night and day. You'd go in on a Thursday and just be a group of like young, vibrant people all sitting around, like sharing a pizza, having drinks, rolling dice, having fun, playing games. And then you'd go in on the Tuesday and it would be maybe 9 sad, fat old men. And like, none of them would be buying drinks. None of them would be doing anything other than just sitting at poker tables in silence, playing poker. And then they'd all take a smoke break at the same time. And they'd all sit in silence in the smoking area and go back in and then silently play poker for 2 hours before nodding at each other and leaving again. Poker is a game for degenerates, basically, is what I'm saying.
Is that what you're playing at the moment?
Kind of. Have you heard of Balatro?
No.
Balatro is a sort of deck-building roguelike in the style of Slay the Spire that is very, very loosely based on just actual poker. The deck you start out with is a 52-card, like, playing card deck of cards, and you have to make poker hands to score points, and each round you have to beat an increasing, like, point total before you can move on, and you have a limited number of hands to do it. So, like, you play the first time, and you just get dealt out your hand of cards, and it's just regular playing cards, and you make, like, your two pairs or full house or whatever the fuck, and you score your points and you move on. And then after each round, you go to the shop, and in the shop you can buy jokers, and the jokers are like the relics in Slay the Spire, in that they change something or fundamentally break a rule in just increasingly daft and weird ways. Like there's ones that are like every time you play a spade, you multiply your score by 4. Every time you play an even card, like you add 20 chips to your pile, and you just keep adding, collecting combinations of these jokers to make bigger multipliers and bigger scores in a way that, like, it's just that very visceral number goes up, makes you feel good. And it just gets so daft. As you progress through it, you unlock more jokers. One is like, it's a joker that's been torn in half, and that like will like quadruple your score, but only if you play like 3 cards instead of 5. One of the jokers is literally just a credit card that you can just use to go into debt and buy stuff. As you progress, you get like, there's like playing cards that have like all the planets in the solar system on them that like upgrade your scoring. There's tarot cards that break rules. The more you unlock, just the more weird shit there is. And it just lets you build bigger and bigger combos. And it's honestly, because I'm new to it and I haven't put in like the hundreds and hundreds of hours that I have in Slay the Spire, it's hard for me to compare. But I like, on a pure like design level and how that design just gets lodged in your brain, I don't know if it's better, but it's definitely in the same ballpark, and I am fully obsessed with it. It's an easy recommend. But how about you anyway? What have you been playing, and what card game would you like to shit on?
I'm going to shit on chess or something. I don't know. It's not even a card game. I'm going to just think of something else that, you know, quote unquote normal people play, you know, to match your just insane poker rant you just had there a moment ago. Unfortunately, I don't got anything to talk about, Kev, because the only thing I've played recently is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which I've talked about. We'll probably talk about again. I have finished it a good while ago. I feel like I finished it at a moon's age ago at this point now. After a couple of weeks, it took me about 85 hours. I didn't do everything in the game, but I did the vast majority of it. I kind of have a similar opinion to what you just said there, but writ larger, where I do have problems with it, but they're kind of, I do, and there's problems that with it I wouldn't dare talk to you about, because they're, you know, maybe, you know, something to only talk about with someone who's finished the game, you know.
Yeah,
so I'll hold them close to my chest, but for the large part, I just had an absolutely joyous time with this game. Be surprised if I like any game more than this year. It kind of, yeah, it made me sincerely happy. I have problems with it, but in the face of everything that's great about it, they don't really matter to me. I absolutely loved it. Best thing Square Enix has done in a long time. But I'm going to try, maybe when you finish it in like, I don't know, 70 months from now, we can
basically we
can do an episode on it, maybe get that out there. But no point. Hopefully when we do our next episode, I'll have actually played another video game. I literally don't think I've touched another single video game since I finished Final Fantasy VII Rebirth there a few weeks ago. I was out of the country for a while though as well. I was gallivanting.
Yeah.
I was gallivanting.
Yourself and John were gone on your Marcy moon.
I like that. Absolutely using that from now on. In all the many opportunities I get to use them with all my various trips to Mars, obviously, you know. But we are talking about God of War today, Kev. Is that right?
That is correct.
Is that correct? And now we're specifically talking about God of War, open parentheses, 2018, close parentheses, and its sequel, God of War Ragnarok.
I believe it's God of War, colon, Ragnarok.
Yeah, you know, I set the precedent for that and then just didn't follow through, did I? I think before we get into them, I would like to just do like just talk about the original God of Wars for a second.
Yeah.
And I don't really like, you know, just kind of shuffling them out, you know, as a little kind of prologue to talking about, you know, the modern God of Wars. Because I do think they've kind of been disregarded by many as a kind of, oh, the old God of Wars that kind of were preludes to the new good God of Wars. I don't think they deserve that. I think they're kind of, the first two were kind of two of the jewels of PlayStation 2, I think. I have very fond memories of those games. It's just that, I don't know, their tone, whatever you want to call it, has kind of aged, maybe.
Yeah.
Which is why kind of people look back at it in kind of, you know, not with disdain, but, you know, I think at the time they were regarded as these masterpieces, but I don't think they are really anymore. But I think they're great. They were essentially a gritty, violent take on Greek mythology. You played as angry man TM Kratos. And, you know, you basically, over the course of a trilogy and a few prequels, decimated the entire Greek pantheon and various other mythological creatures and heroes and stuff like that. But I look back at kind of, you know, kind of quote-unquote edgy, try-hard games of that time, and I don't really think God of War is that. I would look at something like, do you ever play Prince of Persia Warrior Within?
Liam, can I be honest with you, man?
Yeah?
The only time I've ever played any Prince of Persia game was briefly playing Sands of Time in your house and hating it and turning it off after 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's a really good one. But anyway, we'll move past that. But yeah, that has a kind of a quaint fairy tale aesthetic, and then Prince of Persia Warrior Within, its sequel, had heavy metal and swearing and violence. Okay. That's more what I look back in the kind of mid-2000s. God of War has a little bit of that, but God of War has this very, very kind of, the old God of War is a very gorgeous aesthetic. Like, there were these linear games, but they were always set in this crazy fantasy architecture, you know, big rotating chambers and levels and the places that tend to loop around in each other. And there was a lot of effort put into those games, and they were kind of like Devil May Cry, but easier. So rather than, you know, learning combos and, you know, getting good, they were just kind of, you know, they were more kind of, they kind of just flowed, and it was very easy combos and you learn skills.
Yeah, I think they were kind of within the sort of the broad genre of spectacle fighters. They kind of prioritized the spectacle over the technicality of the fighting in a way that, like, the fucking Devil May Cry and Bayonetta was more combo focused, whereas God of War was more about, you know, tearing down a mountain sized god and feeding him his own testicles or something.
Yeah, that's it. And if they were more focused on the spectacle, the main spectacle would have been the wanton violence.
Oh yeah,
that was, you know, realized through its violent protagonist. Kratos has become probably one of the most iconic, famous video game protagonists of all time. But people kind of turned on him at the time. It was like really fun and cool. It was like, oh, he beats people. Like, he needs to get this acolyte guy to read from this stone tablet. And when he's trying to get him to read, he smashes his face off it. But within a few years of the original trilogy, I think people, you know, kind of turned on it, didn't they? It was like, this isn't that cool. I think the main culprit is the third God of War for the PS3, which I do have many pleasant things to say about. I remember at the time probably never seeing a game with such good graphics at the time. Yeah. And like, and that spectacle you talked about was just dialed up to the end. But that was when kind of people started kind of getting a little bit tired of what God of War was doing with its edgy, violent protagonist. And, you know, we're doing an episode on the latter God of War, so I won't go on about it, but I have other problems with that game as well. I think it's easily my least favorite of the original trilogy. But, you know, to spoil it, Kev, in that game, Kratos essentially finishes off Greek mythology. He basically ends the Greek gods, kills them all. You think he's dead at the end of it. After credit sequence, he might not be. He's sent chaos all through Greece, and there's a trail of blood, and he's disappeared, he's gone. Fitting end to God of War, honestly. This kind of very of its time, violent rendition of Greek mythology. I think that's a pretty good place to leave it. And they did a few prequels. I think there's three prequels. I think at least two of them came out after God of War 3, maybe one. So, you know, they obviously was like, they were like not going to do anything after.
Were they on the PSP or the Vita or one of those, or
both, or? Two of them were, and then one of them was on the PS3. Cool. And that was like a nice little bow on top, and I was content to leave it there. You know, like I said, people had kind of, you know, me myself had kind of gone a little bit tired of the shtick, you know, in God of War 3, Kratos does, you know, in order to raise a platform up, he does wedge a woman inside the mechanism of a switch. You know, that's a puzzle you have to do in it, you know?
Yep.
So, I mean, it's funny if you look at it like in a certain angle, but, you know, this is also the same game that kind of tries to write at the last minute in the same game where he's like, you know, having sex with Aphrodite and gouging Poseidon's eyes out, tries to kind of team him up with Pandora and make a kind of surrogate daughter in him. It's just kind of a tonally, like, you know, all over the place game. So it really did feel like this is a fine place to leave it. But lo and behold, many years later, they returned to the series with God of War 2018, which is a sequel and a reboot. And it's a reboot both in terms of, like, it's a massively different story and also massively different gameplay-wise. I remember when it was announced, it was just like a trailer at E3, and then, you know, you see the boy who we now know is Atreus coming in and from the hunt, and then you hear someone talking, and I was like, that's definitely Kratos, but some people are like, is that Kratos? And then he walks out of the shadows, and it was, but what, that was an amazing moment, but the more amazing moment was when it transitioned into gameplay and the camera was fixed right behind Kratos' back, rather than kind of zoomed out kind of POV that you'd have in their old games. And, you know, he didn't have his iconic Blades of Chaos anymore, which were some of the coolest weapons ever in a game. Kratos used to have these swords that were chained to his arms that he flung around like big murdering yo-yos. He had this axe. And I remember seeing that trailer and going, oh my God, they're going for it. They're doing something fresh and new and exciting with this franchise. But little did I know how much of a reboot they were doing, you know, how many different dimensions of rebooting this game and how successful they would be at it. So I'm a huge fan, huge fan of both these games, but particularly God of War 2018, Kev. So what's your opinion on this game?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose let's stick with 2018 for the moment, because 2018 is, in my book, just a masterpiece. I truly love it. My background with the God of War franchise was that I had played like 1 and 2. I don't think I ever played 3. Never played any of the spin-offs. I liked it. I didn't have any real connection to the franchise. I didn't care about them. And I think that's because, like, in my sort of slightly outside it view, like, the games are never really about anything. They're, like we said, they're spectacle fighters with the spectacle ratcheted up to the max. And that's cool. Like, there's definitely value in that. And I'm not shitting on them for that. But, like, I never felt like they were really telling any kind of a meaningful or interesting story. It was just like Kratos has some reason to seek revenge and then does so in the bloodiest and most explosive way possible. And then it just sort of ends, and then you do the same thing in the next one. And like I said, like, that's all well and good. But what kind of drew me into 2018 was from that E3 trailer. Was that like maybe 2016, was it? It just seemed like they were trying to do something a bit different with it. That it was going to be more about a narrative and a relationship and characters in a way that the previous games weren't. And, like, that absolutely hooked me. The characterization of Kratos and Boy were just phenomenal. And it's funny you mentioned about that E3 trailer, because I was just thinking the same thing. When you, like, heard the voice and you're like, that's Kratos. I heard the voice, it's like, that's Teal'c.
It is Teal'c, isn't it? Yeah, I didn't know he was recast at first at all, but yeah, it's Christopher Judge is now the voice of Kratos, who's not the original guy, and he's just fantastic in it.
He absolutely nailed it.
Kevin is referencing Stargate SG-1 there for people who don't know.
I don't think we need to explain who Teal'c is, Liam.
O'Neill, I don't understand some technology, O'Neill. That's it. That was it, Kevin, wasn't it?
That's uncanny, man, yeah.
But would it be fair to say that this God of War, it was immediately apparent that this was God of War meets The Last of Us? Is that too simplistic a description? It was definitely influenced by that other previous Sony hit, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. Or maybe they're both kind of pulling from the same sort of general narrative font of stories about protectors and, you know, the sort of parental relationships, and how that's sort of an easy shorthand to sort of add meaning and gravitas to a story.
Well, I do know that the lead designer in this game, Corey Barlog, and it's what's actually really cool about the God of War franchise, which I kind of forgot about, is I bring this up on this podcast whenever it kind of, you know, jumps into my memory about old games. I definitely brought it up when we're talking about Metal Gear Solid 2 and stuff like that. And whenever I encountered it, it was one of those cool games that I wish everything did, where it had like DVD extras on the discs. The old PlayStation 2 games did.
Yeah.
So I like watched the making of God of War 1 and 2. And like, I have such big memories of that. Was one of the first times I ever saw, you know, a big game production behind the scenes. and kind of what went into it. And it was very, very long, like extras making up. So I was well aware of Corey Barlog from my youth. I remember him from the extras of watching those games. He worked on God of War 1 and then became the lead designer in God of War 2. And controversially left God of War 3 at the beginning of the production of it. And I do know that he was the guy who kind of, you know, came to Sony with this idea, and he was just like, basically, what do we need if we make a God of War sequel? It's like, here, people don't like Kratos anymore. Yeah. So we need to change that character. And one of the other main things, Kev, was that in the meantime, he'd become a father. So I don't think it's just as, I don't think it's just as simple as, you know, that worked for The Last of Us. Look what they managed to mine narratively out of that with a kind of an older protector and a young person traveling with him. I do think Corey Barlog had a story he wanted to tell here, which is kind of why it worked, probably why it worked so well, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like, with the word story, you're hitting the nail on the head of a big part of why I love this game so much. It's such a simple story.
Yes.
It's Kratos and boy. Kratos's wife and boy's mother has passed away, and they want to bring her ashes to the tallest point in the realms. Big mountain, you can see it in the distance. And that's it. That's your whole narrative setup. They want to just go to the big tall place.
Can you see in the distance? Don't you have to go through like a portal to another realm to eventually get to it? No, didn't you? I don't think that's the mountain they end up going to. It's an even bigger mountain they end up getting to, isn't it?
Oh, true. The first mountain is where you find Mimir, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, there's always a bigger mountain.
There's always a bigger mountain. Yeah, it manages to have its cake and eat it too. Well, it's wonderfully, for a genre and for a AAA game, for like a story-driven bloody Sony exclusive as well, it's such a simple human story.
Yeah.
But it manages to also have all this epicness at it and its peripheral. So it is, of course, like Kratos is a god. He's left Greece now in the Greek pantheon. Now he's in Scandinavia. And this one's all about Norse mythology. So while it is, like I said, have his cake, eat it too. While it is this very intimate story about a father and son and them bonding and you know, that story being told very well and also being told very well through the gameplay, it also has, you know, the world serpent. It has all these, you know, famous gods like Freya and stuff like that. It's so it how did they manage to thread that line? I'm always impressed by how you always think it's going to hit a point where the story will balloon, and it doesn't. That happens in a sequel. This game from start to finish, even though there is a bigger mountain, but this game from start to finish is about Kratos and his son taking ashes, his dead wife's ashes to a tall mountain. I think there's a lot of restraint there.
Yeah, there's a sort of a very clear through line to the whole thing that really works in the game's favor, that they can have a world serpent and like interdimensional travel and dwarves and all this stuff. And that's all fine because it happens moment to moment, but you always know that whatever you're doing is moving you closer to the next big mountain until eventually you find the big enough mountain to leave the ashes on. But it's that sort of purity or clear simplicity of the narrative design that kind of keeps things moving through what otherwise could become kind of, and this is maybe a little foreshadowing to my thoughts on the next one, but kind of bloated and less interesting.
Hmm. And it is about a father and son, but, you know, more accurately, it's about a god and his son. And it's about his son kind of figuring out who he is and finding out that he's a god and kind of coming to terms with that. And what it does really well, now whether or not, you know, us as the player can look back at the other games and go, Kratos, he did put a woman into the mechanism of a switch one time, you know?
Yep. That we know of. One time that we know of.
One time in gameplay, yeah. I mean, if he thought to do it that time, I think it's because he'd done it before. You know?
Yeah, it didn't seem like it was the first time.
But what they attempted to tackle here, and again, not easy, but I think they did it very well, was to kind of humanize Kratos, make it a bit of a redemption story for him. Not overtly as in, you know, I want to be a good person now, but he kind of realizes that, you know, maybe his son doesn't have to be this, or not even that. Maybe he's just kind of figuring out the nature of his own son. And it is like the early hours of this game is very kind of it's a really good bit, and it's a really famous bit in this game. When Atreus first kills his first human in it, yeah. And kind of, you know, he's kind of freaking out a tiny bit, he's upset, and Kratos kind of just, you know, kind of cups his face in his hands and just says, like, close your heart to it, you know? It's about him training him, getting him ready for this, you know, awful, horrible, violent world they live in. But I also think the game is kind of about Kratos realizing that his son might be better than him. And yeah. Through his son, he has a chance of kind of redeeming some of his past actions.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's maybe Kratos doesn't see a path to redemption for himself. So his only way to leave the world a better place is through making sure Atreus survives and is like his best self. Which I think is interesting that it's Kratos is putting all of his hopes into Atreus, which obviously is putting a lot of pressure on him. Yeah. And how the relationship and the dynamic plays out between them is maybe the strongest aspect of the game.
And it's just a good script, pacing-wise, in terms of, you know, because it's simple stuff, but, you know, simple stuff is very good if it's executed well. Just very simple stuff of, you know, beginning with the kind of, you know, Kratos being the angry dad. There's a moment he wants to rest his hand on his son's shoulder, but he kind of recoils away and doesn't do it because he's not, you know, that emotionally available yet, maybe, you know, not that willing to kind of open up to his son and even like a small kind of physical gesture. But it kind of, when it goes forward and Atreus starts finding out what he is, that, you know, he's the son of a god, he's God as well, and that he's actually quite powerful. You have that like, stretch of the game where Atreus becomes a little shit, you know?
Yeah.
And Kratos kind of starts seeing, you know, the violence that, you know, might be hereditary, you know, that he might have passed down to his son, and kind of, it's just good. It's good, good stuff. And I think, to kind of go back to The Last of Us for a second, I think the relationship between Joel and Ellie in that first game is absolutely like the anchor that the narrative hangs off of.
Yeah.
But it is completely absent in the gameplay because they decided to make Ellie this kind of, you know, invisible to zombies kind of ghost, you know?
Yeah.
And it's not that big a deal, you know, it's not a deal breaker, but it does have that kind of dissonance, which you don't have in God of War. And I think God of War in that sense is an improvement on that because you have this relationship growing in the story and it's mirrored in the gameplay. Atreus is a useful partner gameplay wise, and his usefulness grows as the games go on in just very simple mechanical ways. Like he learns new moves, you improve those moves, you improve his attributes. But what a kind of cool shorthand for their relationship growing stronger, you know, and them growing more comfortable around each other, you know, growing closer.
Yeah. I mean, whatever the opposite of ludonarrative dissonance is.
I think it's just called Ludo, isn't it?
Yeah, ludonarrative consonants. I don't know. But yeah, it is. It's seeing the story like wrought and played out in the gameplay, and it's worth mentioning as well. The gameplay in this is excellent.
Yeah,
like absolutely. What we've spoken a good bit about the narrative and the characterization and the storytelling, and they're all great. But this thing plays really fucking well. It's just an absolute joy to smash things open as Kratos. And you've mentioned like that he has this axe, the Leviathan axe, instead of his trusty blades. That axe is one of my favorite video game weapons of all time. It's just an absolute joy to get to play with.
It's one of those kind of great design choices, you know, that I love to see in games where they come up with one mechanic that spiders out into several things throughout the game.
Yeah.
You know, the axe is an amazing, you know, amazingly fun to use in combat, but how it becomes your kind of main tool with interacting with the world as well.
Mm-hmm.
It basically works like Thor's hammer Mjolnir, you know, you throw it and you press the button to snap it back into your hand again, which is super fun in combat. But then all the puzzles are designed around it. And it's just the axe is, you know, the axe is your main tool. I just think it's genius.
You can even use it to hold a switch open if there aren't any women around.
He doesn't need women in his mechanisms anymore. He has an axe now. And there's a lot of shorthands like that. I just like the way, you know, look, it's been a couple of years since I played. I can't remember if it's triangle or square or circle. But, you know, in combat, let's say it's triangle. It is, yeah. Triangle is the Atreus button.
Oh no, it's square for Atreus. Triangle is triangle is recall the axe.
Thank you. Square is the Atreus button, and you know it makes you can make Atreus hit enemies with arrows in combat. But all through the game, anytime you need to hoist Atreus up onto a ledge, get him to climb a ladder, get him to read from a tome because he can read a language that Kratos can't because from his mother's side, it's always square. And I just like simple stuff like that, and you just get retrained in your brain that square is the Atreus button. You know?
Yeah, that's great.
And like we go on about this being, you know, a very simple story, but I'm always impressed by how it is this kind of linear thing for the most part. Simple story of father and son, but it's just this big game. But I love the size of it. Do you know the exact size of it?
Yeah.
Especially in 2018, which would even more than now would have been kind of, we were kind of even up to our ankles in open world games. I think they coined a term for it, Kev. I think it actually came from the God of War team to describe exactly what this is. But I can't remember it now, but it's that idea that, you know, a game that kind of opens and closes.
Yeah, sort of like an accordion structure, I guess.
Well, we're calling it an accordion structure now.
Yeah, okay, I'm fine with that.
But it's also so large. Like you said, there's like the main area is the Lake of Nines, and I adore the Lake of Nine is called, isn't it?
Yeah.
I absolutely adore it because you revisit it all through the game. I love this kind of stuff. This is like a good Zelda dungeon to me. You revisit it all through the game, and as you return to it, something might have happened, like you summon a massive world serpent, you know, that might have, you know, and it displaces the water. So every time you return to it, the water has gone down more, and it's revealed kind of, you know, areas that were sunken beneath the seas and the last time you visited. And it's just a great kind of way of just having a world expand. I prefer that over the size of God of War Ragnarok.
Oh, absolutely.
That it has this kind of, it's not an intimate area. It's still quite large. You gotta row around it in your boat, but it's reused so elegantly. And over the course of the game, you get to unearth all these different secrets. And it has that, but it's still a game that has you go to multiple different realms, you know? So we talk about it being this linear kind of intimate story, but it's just such a large game. And it manages to juggle it so well, I think.
Yeah. How long was 2018? I mean, the game, God of War, not the year 2018.
that was one of the short years, I think. Kev. Was it about 20 hours?
Yeah, I mean, that feels about right.
Yeah. Because I remember the Ragnarok just felt like so much longer.
Interminably long.
Interminably. I feel like when we're going to get into a sequel here, you're not going to be quite as nice, are you?
No, I mean, not to jump the gun on it, but I don't like it.
I didn't know there was going to be, we're going to be argumentative in this episode. I thought we were going to chill and talk about our boy Kratos and his son.
Yeah, okay.
We're going on a wacky wild adventure.
Will we get on to Ragnarok and get this out of the way? Okay. Sure. God of War Ragnarok is an excellent 10 out of 10, 20 hour game. awkwardly thumbed into like a 50-hour hole.
Your way with words again always just mesmerizes me.
Thanks. I really there's a lot to love. A lot of the stuff that it does well is really exceptional. It just bored the tits off me as I got through it.
Really?
Well, I never finished it. I tried to go back and I couldn't. I haven't even looked up the ending, so I don't know how the story ends, unfortunately. But yeah, it's for me, it's like a textbook definition of sequel bloat.
Right.
That they took the first game, they went like, what are the things that worked in this game? And instead of going, learning from what made this work, in that it was like the simplicity of the narrative and the clear through line. They're like, let's take all the individual things that went well and just do more of that and make everything bigger. And let's add more skill trees and more currencies and more things to upgrade. And let's completely blow the story out of proportion. And I by the time I stopped playing it, I just found myself completely unable to care.
Mm.
I know your opinion differs.
And you used the word bloat there a while ago.
Yeah.
And when you say that word, are you mainly thinking of the gameplay aspect of it? Are you thinking of the narrative, or is it both?
Both for sure.
Really?
Yeah. The narrative is definitely interesting. There's just too much of it. If the first game is a story about Kratos and Atreus bringing the ashes to the top of the biggest mountain they can find, like what's the elevator pitch or the one line summary of Ragnarok?
Let's see if I can do this. I don't know. Atreus is torn between two parts of his lineage.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of thematically, yeah, but what's the plot of the first game is the two of them going up a mountain.
The plot of this one is Ragnarok is coming and Odin's a bastard.
Okay.
Odin's a bastard, man.
Odin's a bastard, man. I will say that's one of my absolute favorite things about God of War Ragnarok is the characterization of Odin.
Oh, yeah.
And the voice acting by, I can't remember his real name, Toby from The West Wing. He plays him like a fucking mob boss, and I love it.
Well, I like most of the characterization in these games, and we can kind of talk about him as a double bill. We don't have to just keep moving on to onto Ragnarok now. But I like all the side characters, and I like Brock and Sindri.
Yeah.
I think they're really good. I like Freya. I like what they did with Thor in God of War Ragnarok. I'm not sure how far along on his kind of story you got from where you got, but, you know, they introduce him as an after credit sequence if you 100% God of War 1, and he's just really big and he's badass, and he's like that for most of the game. But they ended up going in quite a sad direction with the character that I quite liked. So do you know that this was originally intended as a trilogy?
No, that's interesting.
Yeah, so the plan was originally to do exactly what they did with God of War, the old series, was to do it like they did their trilogy on Greek mythology, like prequels as well, but let's just say the main story.
Yeah.
Three games. They wanted to do the same on our Norse chapter of this saga. We'll do three games as well. And it was actually Corey Barlog who wasn't the lead designer on this game. He wasn't in charge of it, but he was producing it. He kind of pitched it, and he was like, "Can do you think we can do this in two? Basically, can we wrap up the Norse chapter in this second game?" And that's why I think there's something kind of commendable about that. I do think they packed a lot into it, and I do think it feels bloated and rushed at the same time, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. I think that their attempts to avoid making a Godfather 3 just ended up making Godfather 2 worse.
And look, if you haven't, actually, I was going to say, if you haven't finished, I'm not going to spoil it for you.
Spoil it, absolutely do.
Okay. But what I will say,
if I cared, I would have found out by now.
But what I will say, just to kind of cut to the core of it, like it is much bigger and there's so much more going on. It is about 15 more characters and obviously fucking Ragnarok's in it. But I still think the Kratos and the Atreus stuff is handled very well. And it is kind of a perfect kind of evolution of the work that was done in the first game. And it is much more, again, it's Atreus kind of finding his own path. A lot of this game has them separated as well.
Yeah.
Which was kind of hidden from the kind of, you know, the previews of this game. I didn't know going anyway that you'd be playing as Atreus solo for a lot of this game. Did you know that? No.
No, I didn't. And I really like the way that's handled. It's one thing we didn't mention in the first game is the one-shot nature of it.
It was definitely something we need to bring up. Yeah, how it's all made to look like it's one shot, and they come up with really elegant ways to kind of do that in the first game, and I would still call it elegant in the second game, but a little bit, you know, more difficult to pull off.
Yeah, I do like in particular when it's handing control from Kratos to Atreus.
Yeah,
a lot of those transitions are really enjoyable, and the camera shifting over to indicate, you know, which character you're going to be taking over next. Thought it was clever. It's really well done.
But what I like really narratively about it is that you have you have the father-son bond of the first game and how they change over that. It's very satisfying. But I think what the writers were trying to kind of pull off with this one is the kind of the correct notion that for, you know, someone to really grow up, they're not really going to be just learning from their parents. So a lot of this game is Atreus out in his own. He meets I can't remember her name, that friend he meets, you know, he learns a lot from her, but a lot of the story is him as well over with the Norse gods, with Odin, with Thor, up in I genuinely almost said Mount Olympus. No. My friend just went, no, that's not right. What we're Asgard.
Asgard.
Up in Asgard. And I think I think this is a very good game for the characterization of Atreus, and I think it's also more subtly an excellent game for the characterization of Kratos, and that he kind of sees his son growing beyond him, and I think he kind of learns from his son. There's a really good bit, Kev. There's a really good bit, like I said there earlier on. I mentioned in the first game when Atreus kills his first human, and Kratos is like close your heart to it. During Ragnarok, in the final battle in this game, there's a bunch of innocent people being killed in the crossfire, and Kratos points it out, and Atreus just says, I know, close my heart to it. And Kratos goes, no, you don't do that. You're not like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's just a perfect kind of little cherry on top of how far these characters have come, you know?
Yeah, I really like that.
And kind of Kratos kind of realizing, like I mentioned talking about the first game, that Atreus is not him, you know? He's not the god of war. Because these games also deal with, you know, just a very relatable for me anyway, Kev. I don't know if it was relatable for you, but, you know, what it means to be a god. And, you know, and you see that. You see that kind of portrayed in how Odin is just a complete fucking slimy bastard, you know?
Yeah.
But there is a big, a cool moment when he's yelling at Kratos, like, you know what, he knows all about Kratos, just his absolute history of savagery. And he's like, you don't know what it is to be loved, you know, you don't know what it is to be a god and stuff like that. And that is kind of a big theme of the game. And, you know, I actually won't spoil it, Kev, so directly, but the ending does kind of dwell on that. And it ends on a good point for Kratos, and it ends on for our man with the penchant for pushing women into the mechanisms of switches. It ends on a hopeful note for this god soul, which I quite liked as well. And absolutely sequel bait as well. This is not going to be the end of the God of War.
Yeah, I don't think anyone thought they're going to let that cash cow die. Have you played the Valhalla DLC?
Nope. I know, that would have been a cool thing to play before we did this episode, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, well. I hear it's good.
It's really good. And wasn't it free?
It was, yeah.
Absolutely maniacs. That's so generous. I hear it's really good. And it has a lot of connections to the old trilogy as well, which is super cool. I like all that. But I know what you mean in terms of then this size of God of War Ragnarok, because that kind of opening and closing nature of the first game, where you kind of be on a linear path and then you'd be kind of let out into our open world, is like tenfold. In God of War Ragnarok, you're let into these massive areas to explore, kind of these kind of side quests you can do, areas you don't have to visit. There was a lot of that in the first game as well, like whole areas you didn't have to visit, you know, that were just these side quests that open up into these big worlds. And that's kind of gone even higher now in God of War Ragnarok. There's an area near the end of the game that's just absolutely massive. But the thing is, I found it all meaningful and satisfying gameplay-wise. I didn't feel like the game was ever spinning its wheels or wasting my time. I thought it was all good, but it gives the game just the most unwieldy pacing you'll ever find, though.
Yeah, it's like it's in Last of Us 2 territory. It's just because that large open area towards the end of the game, that's where I bowed out. I finished that. I did everything in that area. I probably should have just moved on, but that's not the way my brain is wired. If there's content in front of me, I'm going to do it. And I got to the end of that, and then I think mentioned to you in passing that I had finished that. And I was like, but I assume it's moving to the end game now. I probably only have like a couple hours left. And you're like, no.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a bit to go. And I was like, I don't think I can.
There actually is a bit after that area. So like, I didn't 100% this game, but I did an awful lot of it. And like I said, because while you're kind of wandering around, just, you know, exploring as well, you know, Kratos has Mimir strapped to his belt. Mimir is essentially a talking head. And I just think Mimir is like one of the best characters ever. And I like the writing of their banter and their talking between either him and Kratos or and Atreus and stuff like that. So I don't know. I never found the game a slog to be in. I freely admit that it's paced quite badly. And, you know, I think I might have had to put the game down for a couple of days, you know, sometimes so I can get kind of much back more into the mood to play it, you know. Yeah. But I like being in it. I like the story directions. There's some big twists. I think they kind of like to smell of their own farts a little bit too much in God of War Ragnarok.
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit. I think... because God of War 1, or so God of War 2018, I should say, was praised so much for its writing, for its performances, for its characterization, I think they kind of were like, all right, we can do no wrong here. And it's almost like every moment has to be this big thing that we're expected to care about. Freya reunites with her estranged brother, and it's given the same emotional gravitas as Kratos and Atreus reaching the mountain at the end of the first game. You know, if every moment is big, then none of them are. That kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And I'm not poo-pooing the entire narrative, but I was definitely aware of it being a little bit try-hard, is what I'm going to call it, honestly.
Yeah.
And some of the writing, some of it was like, I can't care about all of this, guys. I'm sorry. You're very good. This is a very good take on Norse mythology, but I can't care about all of this, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was a combination of feeling exactly the way you've described there with also just a massive frustration with some of the gameplay systems in the sequel.
Go on. That
I just, it's just too much.
Right, yeah.
It's just too, you add another weapon to your arsenal and it's cool and it gives new ways to solve puzzles and like you can mix and match between weapons in combat and build combos and you have elemental damage and you've like attacks that trigger off other elemental damage and you have like skill trees and skill trees and skill trees and you can upgrade Atreus and you can upgrade Kratos, you can upgrade each of the weapons individually and you can upgrade like your fucking cod piece and I just could not care less.
Too much.
My perfect video game at this point is I don't know, man, Tetris. Even then, I feel like there's too much in, like, if Tetris, but it's all just straight line pieces. Just give me that. Like, I don't want any customization. I don't want any openness. Just, I think I just want a book at this stage.
I do. At our next episode of the podcast, we'll be doing Pride and Prejudice. But I'll meet you halfway here and say that I agree with you in essence, though not to the same extent, probably mirroring how we feel about poker, I think, maybe, to be honest. God of War, these two games, God of War, these two games we're talking about, has one of my biggest kind of things that irk me in games. Games like this that have RPG elements is, I don't feel, you feel like you're growing powerful in increments, so then you don't really ever get the satisfaction of getting more powerful in it.
Yeah.
If I get a new skill and it gives this, you know, you get a new thing, I can attach my weapon and it adds cooldown plus 4%. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
I don't care.
If you're doing plus 1.5% extra damage against enemies that are on fire, so what? So who gives a shit? Like,
I'm telling you, Kev, I was playing the Super Nintendo classic Super Mario RPG, okay? The remake for it on the Switch there last Christmas. And it's the most pared down, simplistic JRPG you could ever get. But what it did like gangbusters was every time I leveled up, it felt good. Yeah. I get one more flower point. That's going to be super useful, honestly. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I love that stuff. I like feeling more powerful. And I know I get that from software games as well, though, sometimes, Kev. But I think I'd be crucified for saying that because the absolute malleability and customizability on that game is insane. You can absolutely just carve yourself. And I think God of War, these two games we're talking about, might have that as well. But I never really felt it. It just kind of felt like I was going through the motions of upgrading everything. You know, I think you can kind of look at the numbers and see this one has an up arrow, so this stat is going higher. I'll equip this and like that. And you just kind of go to a shop with Brock and Sindri. I just kind of upgrade the thing that makes this slightly more powerful and move on. And yeah, I'm getting more powerful through the game. I must be, but I'm not really feeling it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think, like, briefly in defense of FromSoft games, I think with those, for me at least, it's because the level ups and the weapon upgrades are so incremental and so small and really don't feel like they're doing anything at all. That has the knock-on effect of that when you do overcome whatever your challenge you're facing, be it the boss or the next area or whatever, you feel like it's because you have gotten better. You get good. So it makes it feel more meaningful. Whereas in God of War, I don't know, it always felt just about doable and it never felt like I was overcoming a huge challenge by getting through. I'm not saying it's an easy game and I'm not saying I'm some sort of fucking pro gamer, But it all felt like doable. And the upgrades felt like they didn't matter. And it just lost me.
I will say, though, the combat in these games are fantastic. We touched on it earlier. We touched on it a bit earlier. They're absolutely brilliant. I love how it manages to balance being really chaotic, but all your movements are deliberate.
Yeah.
You're not button mashing through these enemies. You know, you're, as you learn more skills, you're kind of, you know, using every trick you have under the bonnet, but you're also kind of, you know, using the correct weapon for the correct enemy and the correct skill for the correct enemy and stuff like that. And it was a big surprise, unadvertised surprise at the end of, or like let's say the third act of God of War 2018, where you, Kratos does regain his Blades of Chaos, and that adds a whole new combat system. And then in the second game, you have those from the get-go, and then you get a cool spear as well. I'm just a huge fan of the combat system in these games. I thought it was super fun. Like you said, I don't think it's an easy game. I actually think it's quite challenging at times as well. Yeah. So it kind of, you don't just kind of glide through. You don't just kind of sleepwalk through it. And my main criticism is with the kind of incremental powering up or leveling up, but not with the combat itself, which I think is a stellar combat system that makes you kind of, it feels mechanical and methodical while also just being, you know, rule of cool, just doing absolutely wacky cool shit, like knocking an enemy up in the air and hitting with your axe and just cleaving folks in two, you know.
The enemy variety is great,
especially in Ragnarok.
The animations are phenomenal. Like there's real weight and heft to, like, even the basic animations, like the light and heavy attack really feel meaningful. But like,
that's all stuff that came from the original ones.
Yeah.
I would say the same thing about the PS2 ones. Like they were always top of the range in terms of graphics and animation. And yeah, you're really just ripping the jaw off that Minotaur, you know, that kind of thing. So these were kind of things I would want to see translated into the new one. Like they feel like such different games, yet they still very much carry the spirit of their forebears in ways like that, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But can I just say, that thing you talked about earlier on where they're made to look like it's all one continuous shot throughout the whole games, which, like you said, there's cool transitions, especially in Ragnarok. I think because it came out in 2018, well into the era where no matter what kind of game you're making, it also has to be an RPG.
Yeah.
This is an action game. This is a narrative action game, but this is huge RPG elements. I think they're a kind of cool idea of having the whole game feel like it's like one continuous cut is kind of sits uncomfortably with how much you have to go into menus and kind of pause the game and actually kind of, so the scenes aren't transitioning, but you're transitioning in and out of menus and awful lot in that game, and you're spending a long time in them. That might just be a very nitpicky thing, but I didn't really kind of jump onto that until my replay of 2018 that I did before Ragnarok came out, where I almost kind of wish these games were less RPG and more just actiony, more just skill based. I didn't have to be in menus upgrading things all the time. I think that's might be a strange criticism, because more options, more customizability, you know, more things to purchase, more things to equip is always a good thing to add depth to a game. But, you know, sometimes, you know, a little bit of a game, a little bit more svelte sometimes, you know?
Absolutely, yeah. I think if there was a way to trim some of the fat off God of War Ragnarok, its combat sandbox would be pretty much perfect. And from what I hear, that's kind of what the Valhalla DLC is.
Yeah.
Is just a kind of a slightly more streamlined roguelike version of that incredible combat. But like, I don't know what the answer is. It like have fewer options but they're more meaningful, or is it like just have a lot of options but have them all unlocked and you can just pick and choose and customize your playstyle? But whatever the answer is, it's not what they implemented.
And these games sold like gangbusters and got tens out of tens across the board, so I think we might be in the minority about this one. But you know, It's definitely something that stands out to me on replay, and is definitely something that goes against the aesthetic, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a good point, in my opinion, being in the minority, and it's not a pleasant minority to find yourself in. There's a lot of overlap between people who don't like God of War Ragnarok and people who don't like The Last of Us Part 2.
Okay.
And unfortunately, that's not a great crowd to be in.
Well, I'm much more learned on the hating of Last of Us Part 2. I have seen people hate on God of War Ragnarok for the sin of having female characters who talk about personalities. Yeah. But anyone who says that is just a fucking smooth brain asshole. We don't have to listen to their opinions.
Yeah, but I worry sometimes that like if I mention that I don't like God of War Ragnarok, people will just be like, oh yeah, okay, he's one of them. I was like, no, I'm not.
The game is so woke, man. They have a talking squirrel in it.
Yeah, voiced by ProZD, and he's great.
He is voiced by ProZD. I didn't know that till after the game.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. I actually saw a video on his channel where he talked about his experience writing and recording it. And yeah, it's just awesome.
Absolutely sick. Yeah, no, we won't talk about it. Like, I have seen, but that's every game now. That's every fucking game. Like, it's any piece of media. It's like I saw someone, Kev. I saw earnestly online calling the new X-Men 97 woke. Now this is
why
this is a story of a bunch of ostracized people who are different, you know, fighting against hatred.
Yeah, yeah. The
it's the same story it was in the 90s and in the 60s when it was a comic book. I don't know.
The X-Men, as in that like walking metaphor that always has been from the moment they were incepted, are now woke.
So I don't even...
Why? Did Storm not get her tits out or something? I haven't watched it.
Actually, it is very horny.
Oh, good.
They knew that their audiences are rather 9-year-olds are now 39-year-olds. 39-year-olds or whatever, you know. No, but back to God of War. That's mental to me. I don't know, beyond someone just being a doofus or a bigot, I don't really know what your problem could be. Is it that Kratos becomes a little bit nicer in this one? Do they like old school Kratos who just, you know, rips harpies in half and, you know, has sex with women on barges as a minigame? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, I think 2 is bloated and unwieldy, but I think over the course of the 2 games, they tell a very, very good story. But my kind of 2 final kind of thoughts on that might be, 1, not even just the story, the entire game. I vastly prefer 2018.
Yeah.
I just think it's better. I think it's more elegant. And even all the gameplay improvements that are on 2, you know, ostensible improvements, I wouldn't miss them. I'd sooner go back and play 1, because my second kind of final thought is I have no real desire to play Ragnarok again. I don't know when I will, to be honest.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I am as well. It's like, even having this chat, I started thinking like, oh, maybe I should try finish it, and it's been so long that there's no point in me trying to pick up that save file again, because like the muscle memory is gone and the actual memory is gone, so there's so many convoluted systems that I won't remember what rune gives me plus 0.75% pissing power, so I won't be able to just slot back in, so I have to start it again. And that will take roughly 9 months. And I just don't know if I have it in me.
You're playing another quite large, quite badly or unwieldy paced RPG at the moment. So
exactly, yeah. I need to dedicate the next 7 weeks to Final Fantasy.
I think that's an okay place to leave it, Kev. It's weird. When I did my solo episode there a few weeks ago on Final Fantasy 16, I kind of went into it I literally just finished it like the day before, and it ended up being a very negative episode, even though I really like that game. But sometimes when you just kind of, you know, when you're not just having the chit chat and you're recording yourself, you got to lay it all out, you know, it gets more negative than you intend, you know.
Yeah.
It massively happened with Final Fantasy 16. It's a game I quite like, even though I stand by all my criticisms, I said, but that kind of happened there again. Ragnarok is a game I really like, but I think I might
have dragged the conversation down a little bit on that one, because I know you are a lot warmer on it than I am.
I don't know, it's been over a year now. I think, like, I don't think of it much. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, it kind of had its moment, like, and I am a man who plays games and then thinks about them for the next 15 years, you know? You know, so I finished it, the credits rolled, the ending, like Ragnarok itself, to be a mild spoiler, was kind of underwhelming.
Okay.
If that's something you care about, I think it's a victim of possibly two games being smushed into one, you know?
Yeah.
But where they left the characters and how the story ends on, the emotional beat it ends on, I thought was very good. But yeah, I kind of just closed the book on it. And they're probably going to do another God of War, and it's probably going to be something really cool, like Japanese gods this time, or Egyptian maybe. And I'll get right back into it then. But for now, I'm just okay to the DLC looks excellent, but I don't know, something... Yeah, I've had no kind of desire to jump back into that world, and I feel kind of bad about that.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Like, whatever they announce next, chances are I'm going to be buying it day one. But yeah, I'm not like eagerly awaiting it yet.
God of War 2018, though, two thumbs up, very good.
Oh yeah, four thumbs up each, 8 thumbs up total. Don't ask where the extra thumbs are coming from. Don't question it.
Well, thank you everyone for joining us on Hey Look Listen. Definitely we won't be gone for as long as we were last time. That was a blip. We won't do that again. Sorry, I feel like I'm apologizing. I'm not apologizing apologizing to you or anyone. No, we won't. That was we were gone for a little longer than we intended, but we're hopefully going to get back on our 2-week schedule now. If you enjoy listening to this podcast, why don't you just like kind of jump on to our socials on Instagram, on X. Mm-hmm. That's where we hang out and maybe tell some friends. But honestly, just thanks for listening. That's so nice of you. I was Liam Sheehan. I was joined here by Kevin O'Carroll. We were talking about God of War : those two games we were talking about. Thanks so much, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.